One Saturday afternoon, a young dad was babysitting his 2-year-old daughter while mom did some errands. He was sitting on the couch with his laptop out, and his little girl was playing on the living room floor when he noticed that she brought into the living room one of her favorite recent gifts, a child's tea set with the little cups and teapot and so forth, and she started playing with it. She went out of the room for a moment and then came back and said, "Daddy, Daddy, would you like a cup of tea?" And in this little plastic teacup was water. "Oh, this was so lovely," thought the dad. He took a cup, sipped the cup of tea, and she was so excited, she ran out. Came back a moment later. "Daddy, Daddy, would you like another cup of tea?" Oh, he just thought this was so lovely and marvelous, and he took a cup of tea. And 3 times, 4 times this happened when finally mom came in. And he said, "Honey, look at this. This is just precious. Watch." And she came back in, just like she had, with this little cup of, "Daddy, would you like another cup of tea?" "Oh, yes," said Daddy. He took his little cup of tea. And with that, the wife said, "You do realize the only water she can reach is in the toilet." Well, you can imagine the marital storm that water brought about. Well, today we're going to talk about another storm with different water. As we begin a sermon series called Taming the Thieves. You see, friends, in real life, thieves come from without to rob us. But spiritually, the truth is that many of us allow spiritual thieves within us to rob us. To rob us of joy, to rob us of hope, even faith, and even love. These thieves we are going to be thinking about in the next 3 weeks include discouragement, insecurity, and anger, a great thief within us. And today, we start off our sermon series acknowledging that one of the greatest of the thieves that can rob us from within, if we allow it, is fear. The thief of fear. That when it gets within our mind and soul, truly steals joy, steals hope, steals peace from us. The word fear is used time and again in the Bible. Fear not is said some 200 or more times. Fear is a real issue in human life. And that's why Jesus addressed it, and especially in this story that Caleb read a moment ago, helps us to think about how to address this thief of fear. Now, the Bible text and story take place at the Sea of Galilee. Last March, a team of some 40 people or so from Trinity were in Israel. And I have such vivid and meaningful memories of having stood on the Sea of Galilee shore. Now, this is really a lake, not a sea. It's referred to as a sea, but it's a big lake. It's 13 miles long, it's 8 miles wide. And it's 600 feet below sea level, which is important when we think about the storms that come up. And this lake is the center, at the biblical time, of economic activity. And so, fishermen, others in the fishing support industry, would have taken their livelihood from the Sea of Galilee. And you remember that 4 of Jesus' disciples were professional fishermen, and all the others lived near that lake. So this is the setting for the storm. The storm that the disciples didn't think was coming. You see, they got in the boat near the end of the day, and the weather was fine. You know how this can happen. And I have had experiences, a life worrisome experience. Years ago, I got in a canoe. Weather was great, and it turned just like this, and I was in the middle of the lake, and suddenly, I hear thunder. Well, storms come up like that. So in the story that we're told by Mark, and also, by the way, Luke and Matthew, which means when a story is told in 3 of the Gospels, it was really important to the early church. So they get into a boat. Jesus says, "Come, let us get into the boat and go to the other side." This comes at the end of a day when Jesus is teaching and surrounded by people. And often, it seems, to get a little bit of respite, he goes away. And in this case, wants to go to the other side of the lake. And so they get into this boat. This boat would have been a typical fishing boat of the time, about 25 feet long. and some 8 feet wide and 4 feet deep. There's a picture here of a Galilee boat remains. This wooden boat, the remains of it, were found about 10 years ago in the mud by the Sea of Galilee during a drought period. We had a chance to stand there and look at it. And what you see here is the remains of 2,000 years. But that's the kind of boat. There was a model there in that museum as well, and there you see it. And so the boat that they got into looked like this. Again, about 25 feet long. A single center sail with room for about 12 to 15 people. So it would have been full up because 12 disciples in Jesus makes. Thank you. Still with me. Okay. So they get into a boat just like this. Now they go out on the lake. The important thing to remember for the storm, for the story, is that the lake, which you see here and which we were on in this picture, on the western side, you see some of the many, many mountains that come right down to the shore of the lake. Steep cliffs with rocky funnel-like indentations so that the wind, when it would come over the mountain and down to the lake, would just create these incredible sudden squalls. And suddenly, the calm lake could be in a storm, could be all torn up. Rain, wind, and excessive storms. So you see how that can happen. So that's what did happen. They get in the boat. Mark tells us they go across the lake, and at some point, Jesus falls asleep. The place in such a boat of honor, the place of status, is in the stern, in the back. So Jesus, the story tells us, has fallen asleep. Everybody else is awake and watching the storm come. And this sudden squall of a storm comes up, and suddenly the wave, the winds, the water, the rain, and this boat is bouncing around like a cork, and water is coming into the boat. And have you ever been in such a situation? It's scary. It is terrible and terrifying. This comes up, and they think they're going to die. Now, here's an interesting thing. Remember, four of them are professional fishermen? If they thought the storm was bad, it was bad, right? They knew storms. Jesus, don't you even care? He's sleeping. Don't you even care? We're going to drown. And Jesus wakes up. And Mark tells us, he says to the wind and the waves, "Be still." The actual Greek word in the Bible that scholars tell us is such a strong word. It's the same word, they note, that was used when Jesus cast out demons from the demon-possessed man. And one contemporary writer says it's the equivalent of Jesus saying to the storm, "Shut up!" A strong demand. And the storm quiets. The water is still. And all is calm. And with that, Jesus looks at his disciples and says, "Why are you afraid? Don't you have any faith?" And the disciples among themselves look back and say, "Who is this? That even the winds and the waves obey him." For you see, they had not yet come to fully understand that this was the Son of God. So we hear the story today, and it is very easy to put ourselves in the story, because we all know fear. We all know fear. Oh, now you may call it other things. You may say worry or anxiety or dread or apprehension. Those are all just lower levels of fear, but they're all under this balloon of fear. You know fear. I know fear. It's a part of what it means to be human. The issue and question for Jesus' followers is, what do we do with the fear, and do we allow that fear to take charge and keep us from the joy and the hope and the faith that we're intended to have? Do we allow that fear to rob us and to be a thief? Well, fear has been a part of every life, every time. They were afraid then. Other instances I've read about include Napoleon Bonaparte, the great general. Napoleon was afraid of cats. Imagine. Richard Nixon, terrified of hospitals. Woody Allen, the great film director, is afraid of insects. Marlene Dietrich, in the early 20th century, voted by some mid-century as the ninth greatest actress of all time, and perhaps you've seen her in the old movies, was so afraid of rejection that her friends, when they were invited to her house, would have to listen to tape recordings of the applause and the ovations that she got at her live performances. They didn't listen to the performances. They listened to everyone cheering her on and applauding her. So afraid was she of being rejected. We know these kinds of rejections. We know these kinds of fears. In this past week, someone spoke to me about how their husband lost his job on Christmas Eve. This past week, someone spoke to me about how their mother is soon, they think, to die. This past week, someone spoke to me about their next cancer treatment and the tests that will follow to determine the status. This past week, someone spoke to me about their adult son having run away, and they haven't heard from them in 3 years. You know fear, and we all know fear. It's not a sin to be afraid. But if we do not do the will of God, we sin in how we respond to the fear. I have a major responsibility coming up, and after all these years, I'm responsible to do something that I have never done in all my ministry. And I'm struggling with the fear of failure. We all know fear. So what is it that this story tells us for when these times come? For they have come, they are with some of you today, and they surely will come back. What does the story teach us about how to tame the thief of fear? I believe the answer is in the very beginning of the story. At the start of this account, Jesus says, "Let us go to the other side." Let us go to the other side. Jesus is in the boat, and he invites them to get in, because he's the one that wants to go, to get in, and says, "Together, let us go." And the last part of it, to the other side. The first part of it reminds us that when the storms come, when your boat is rocking, when your fear is rising, Jesus is already in the boat. When we celebrated his birth just recently, and they said, "Emmanuel has been born." What does Emmanuel mean? God with us. Now, the disciples didn't understand those things, but we have 2,000 years of history, and your whole life, for most of you, of faith, to know that the essence of who Jesus is the personification of God being with us. Jesus' last words on earth, "I will be with you always." Jesus is in that boat when it's rocking. Jesus is indeed with us. So, we're going to have fear. Jesus is in the boat. God is with us when the boat is rocking. And further, he says, "Let us go to the other side." And I like the implication. God has not made life that we will have no storms. We've said that, we know that. The issue is not that there won't be storms, but that God will see us through the storms to the other side. Jesus says, "Let us go to the other side." He promised they're going to get to the other side, which they did in that instance, which we do. Whatever God's will is for us on that other side, we get through. The 23rd Psalm, for many people, including me, one of the central points of faith and of spiritual strength. I say the 23rd Psalm on a regular basis, and I hope you do. Do you know what the most important word in the 23rd Psalm is? Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. You're running through, okay. Yeah. The most important word is through. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Through. Because that's the promise of God to get us through. The psalm doesn't say, even though I get stuck in the valley of the shadow of death. It doesn't say, even though I get lost in the valley of the shadow of death. It says, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will what? Fear no evil. Why? You are with me. When Jesus was born, the angels announced it to the shepherds. What was the first thing they said? The angels to the shepherds, who were just terrified at this surprise manifestation of God in the heavens. The angel first said, fear not. When Jesus is in the boat, when Jesus is going with us across the water, when Jesus is in the storm, fear not. We're going to get through. Whatever that looks like, by God's grace and by God's will, Jesus gets in the boat with us. I have a memory of going deep sea fishing off Cape May many, many years ago. We were fishing for bluefish, and this party boat had about 30 people on it, and the weather was good. We set out at about 7 or 8 o'clock. We were going to be out till 2 or so. We went 10 miles off the coast, at least. And we were, to use a fisherman's phrase, we were killing them, folks. I'm not just little 15-pound bluefish. I mean, this was the event of my fishing experience. Yeah, that's big, right? And we were pulling them in. It was just going great. And everybody was having a great time until the wind picked up. And a little more. And a little more. And then the waves picked up. I remember looking up at the star-lit night that I had seen an hour and a half before. No stars. And then more. And bouncing and rocking. Some of the people went inside the cabin. We were bouncing around so much. They just went inside the cabin, some to lose their dinner, some just to get out of the weather. And I was out there still fishing. This was the greatest fishing experience I'd ever had. They were just pulling them in. It was great. But then I started to get a little fearful. Like, wait a minute. Are we in trouble? We were bouncing, folks. It wasn't raining, but it was spraying. And we were being blown around. And I started to think, should I be afraid? I looked at some other faces. And I saw fear. I mean, we weren't regulars out here. We didn't know. This was just a party boat, but the party went bad. And then, I heard a voice. The voice of the captain came over the loudspeaker. And he said, very calmly, "Well, folks, it's getting a little choppy out here." I thought, there's an understatement. "But everything's fine," said the captain. "And we're going to fish for a little while longer." I said, "Yes." "And not to worry." That's all he said. But you know, my temptation to get afraid out there went fully away when I heard the captain's voice. You see, I knew he was in charge of the boat. He knew everything was going to be fine. We were going to get through this little squall. My fear went away. Unfortunately, so did all the fish, but that's another story. The voice of the captain. It's going to be all right. When you are afraid, when your storm comes, God is in the boat with you, and the voice says, "We're going to get through this. I am with you. I'm going to stay with you. Do not fear." But then, it ultimately all comes down to your choice. You see, when storms come, you have two choices. You can either look at the storm, or you can look at the Savior. Fear looks at the storm. And I know people, sad to say, who just look at one storm after another, and it seems like all they can see are the storms of life, whether they're big or little, and if they're little, they make them big. Because for some reason, they just keep looking at the storms. But I know other people who go through all kinds of horrible things in life, but they keep their eye fixed on Jesus. And looking at Jesus is looking with faith. People of faith look at Jesus. People of fear look at the storm. You have a choice. You always have. You always will have a choice. When that storm comes, who are you going to look at? At the storm or at the Savior? The Savior who's in the boat saying, "We're going to get through this. I am with you. Fear not." Now, I understand how storms sometimes are just so incredibly awful that they just call you and just compel you to look at them. I talk with people every week about these things. Whether it's the job loss or the cancer or the divorce or the broken family. Yes, these are compelling, hard things. I'm not saying look away. I'm not saying be Pollyanna. What I'm saying is as these things come, acknowledge them and then look at the Savior and say, "God, thanks for being with me in the midst of this storm. I'm going to trust that you're going to get me through it. Because I'm going to fear not." Fear not. Wonderful song of faith. It's not in our hymnal, but I wish it was. It says, "Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look in his wonderful face. And the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace." Turn your eyes upon Jesus. And the things of the world, the fears of the world, will grow strangely dim. I found that to be true. They fade in power. They fade in emphasis as I keep and we keep our eyes on Jesus. Turn your eyes on him. Perhaps some of you have been to Michigan, to the Mackinac Bridge. The Mackinac Bridge over Lake Michigan is 5 miles long. Two lanes on either side, 200 feet down to Lake Michigan, weaving, going across the lake, taking people from one place to another, and thousands of drivers go across this bridge every year. However, some are too afraid. And so the state of Michigan long ago instituted a driver support program. So for people who are afraid to drive across this bridge, and there are about 1,200 calls a year, the report says, people who are afraid stop at the edge of the bridge, get on the phone that's provided there, and ask for assistance. Some state employee then goes to their car, gets in their vehicle as they move over, and she or he drives them across the bridge because they're too afraid. Isn't that a wonderful metaphor for what God does with us? When we come to the edge of that bridge, of that fearful situation, of that terrible storm, we pause and say, "Can you help me out here, Lord? Will you come and get in the car and drive me across? Will you come and get in the boat and see me through?" And God always, always says, "Yes, I'll be with you."